Billy Osaka was missing. He hadn't punched in at Northrop, near Hawthorne Airport, where he worked the occasional night shift for extra dough. The airplane production lines had ramped up threefold in the last year. He hadn't gone by the offices of Rafu Shimpo, the Japanese-American newspaper, not even to say he wasn't filing that week. He hadn't answered Nesheim's knock on the flimsy door of his three-room railway apartment in Boyle Heights, and he hadn't been seen by his neighbors, or those who spoke English, at any rate. There had been no sightings of him locally, at the drugstore, on the corner, or Curly's Bar, where Billy drank a beer now and then, and sometimes cashed a check, or at the grocery store, where even Billy had been known to buy a quart of milk. Normally, Nesheim would not have been surprised. Billy was easygoing, but also impetuous, like a classy thoroughbred who sometimes didn't want to race. Once he disappeared for 2 weeks without letting Nesheim know where he was going. When he finally appeared, he said he'd been up in Portland, helping out his cousin with the salmon catch. When Nesheim had looked skeptical, Billy had shrugged and admitted he'd been touring the Sierra with a girl. But this time was different. 3 nights before, when Nesheim had gone home after a long day at the studio lot, he'd found an envelope slid under the front door of his rented ranch house above North Hollywood. Inside, there was a note written in thick pencil. Urgent. Meet me at the Blue Fedora at 5:30 tomorrow. It's important. Billy O. But Billy Osaka hadn't shown. In the bleached morning sunlight of Los Angeles, Nesheim turned off Hollywood Boulevard and moved south on Argyle Avenue, wondering why Billy had wanted to see him so badly. He was only an occasional help to the bureau, usually when a Japanese translator was required, and though he seemed to know everybody, the information Billy provided was never worth a lot. Raw ore, rather than gold. Nesheim slowed down and pulled into the lot of American Motion Pictures, driving through the flimsy gates, feeble imitations of the grander ones at MGM. He stopped at the barrier, and Ernie, the guard, came out of his sentry box, gimpy on his pins. He had thinning hair and sloping shoulders and a handshake soft as pie. A retired cop from the Pasadena Force who had come to California from Minnesota 30 years before. He got a kick out of talking to a fellow Midwesterner who still carried a gun. "You packing today?" he asked with a smile. "Sure thing," said Nesheim. "I do miss my sidearm," Ernie said wistfully. "And it misses you," said Nesheim, in what was an established routine. Ernie chuckled as if he'd never heard it before. There was a sudden revving of an engine. Through the windscreen, Nesheim saw a convertible speeding towards them down the lot. Nearing the barrier, it braked sharply and came to a halt on the other side of the sentry box. The car, a deluxe Packard coupe, was a vivid green chartreuse with white-walled tires and too much chrome. Nesheim figured it belonged to one of the new actors. They would arrive like a rocket in a burst of vainglory. A month on the AMP studio factory-like production line usually brought them back down to earth. From the car, a male voice shouted, "Hurry up, Pops, and open the gate." "Hold your horses, I'll be there in a minute," Ernie said amiably. "I'll push your horses right up your ass if you don't get a move on." Ernie was old and slow and utterly harmless, and Nesheim leaned over to get a look at the speaker. He could make out the profile of a young man's square-chinned face, a blue short-sleeved shirt, and two hands drumming impatiently on the steering wheel. "Take it easy," Nesheim called out through the passenger side window.
"Says who?"
"Says me," said Nesheim.
"Does me want to have horses shoved up his ass, too?"
Nesheim was usually slow to anger, but this guy had jump-started the process. He opened his door and got out to confront him, but just as he stood upright again, the other driver accelerated. His car was so close to the wooden barrier that at first it bent slowly back like a hunting bow, then suddenly snapped like a toothpick. The car surged through. As it sped out the gates, the driver extended his middle finger in farewell.